The Holy Gospel according to St. John, the 11th chapter. This is a long reading, so you may be seated. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of Man may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then, after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble, because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble, because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. The Gospel of the Lord. The season of Lent gives us a special opportunity to really face the reality of death, and with it, the hope of new life in Jesus Christ. This morning, I invite you to imagine today's gospel from Lazarus's point of view. It began with a fever. Martha, my sister, put her cool hand on my forehead, confirming what I already knew. "Oh, Lazarus," she said to me tenderly, "your fever has returned and you're sweating. What will we do?" The first time this happened, about a week prior, the fever I had lasted only a few hours. I was tired, but I could still move around. The fatigue soon lost its grip, and minus some lingering joint pain, I assumed life for me would resume as normal. Unfortunately, the fever returned midweek, lingering this time for over a day before it broke the following afternoon. Now things were worse. The fever came back once more, consigning me to bed, which in my day was a mat of straw. My knuckles had turned yellow. My head throbbed with pain, and my vision had become blurry. Martha, dear Martha, sat next to me, her voice my only consolation. Mary, my younger sister, was gone. Martha told me Mary sent a message about my condition to our dear friend, the teacher, Jesus. "What did she say?" I asked. "Lord, he whom you love is ill," Martha replied quietly. It's true. Jesus, alienated by members of his own family, thought of me as a brother. We met about 2 years before in Bethany, where I live, with Mary and Martha. He had been teaching in our village just outside the marketplace. I could tell he was weary. As the evening approached, I invited him to join us for supper. I wish I could describe him to you, this Jesus. Just being near to him put us at ease. His gaze was penetrating, but not in an intrusive way. The people who came to him, especially the poor, felt understood, and when he stayed with Mary, Martha, and me while in Bethany, he brought such peace to our home. Obviously, of course, there was more to Jesus than his presence. We were spellbound by his teachings, his talk of God's kingdom and eternal life, both of which comprised what he called the way a path to more abundant life that he said was available to us in the here and now. Mary was so entranced by what he shared over our first supper that upon his departure the next day, she insisted he return. "Of course," he replied, "Bethany has a special place in my heart." "Then you," Mary said, "will have a special place in ours." That was the beginning of our friendship. And whenever Jesus came to Bethany, which was often, he would stay with us. Later on, we learned why Jesus was so fond of Bethany, which in my language, Aramaic, means poor house or house of affliction. People call Bethany that because at the center of our town lies a special home for the poor where destitute pilgrims on their way to visit the temple in Jerusalem would often lodge. I remember Jesus once telling several of his disciples, when Mary, my sister, anointed him with expensive oil, that the poor would always be among us. He was referring, of course, to our little almshouse in Bethany, where he would often go to preach the way and care for the sick. Now I, the one he loved, had become sick as well. And this sickness, in spite of what he said, was a sickness unto death. So there I was. Martha, still sitting next to me, caressed my arm. I turned to her. My vision was blurry, no longer able to make out her features. She pulled back. "Lazarus," she said, "your eyes, they are not moving together in the same direction." "My eyes," I thought, "they felt gritty, like there was sand in them." Martha put her hand on my forehead again. The sweat was gone. "It's cold," I said faintly, now shivering. A minute later, Martha draped a blanket over me, but the shivering continued. Soon my shivering turned into tremors. Teeth chattering, my whole body began to shake violently. "Lazarus," Martha yelled. It was a seizure. Martha looked on helplessly, her hands cupped over her mouth. "Oh my God," I heard a voice, another voice exclaim. It was Mary. She had just entered the room. "He's possessed," she said. "It's an evil spirit." "Where is Rabbi?" Martha demanded. "Only he can help us." In my time, of course, it was common to attribute a variety of diseases to evil spirits. But this was not demonic possession. It was what your doctors would call paroxysm, the cyclical occurrence of sudden coldness and shivering followed by fever and perspiration. The seizure made my prognosis clear. I had malaria, a common and unforgiving disease in my world, and I was dying. After a few minutes, the convulsions ceased. Exhausted, I slept for several hours. Night came. Mary, never able to sit still, departed again, desperate to find the whereabouts of Jesus. "Martha," I mumbled upon awakening. The room was dark. "Martha," I repeated. I turned my head slowly to the right. A sliver of light came through the door leading into my room, slightly ajar, from a lamp we kept in the hallway. She must have stepped out, I thought. The room was silent. save a gentle breeze coming through the open window that occasionally inspired the door to creak ever so slightly. I felt so alone. Martha, I repeated. No answer. God, I said a few moments later, where are you, God? Where are you? Help me, God. Please help me. I heard nothing. The pain in my temples continued to throb. My breathing had become shallow. Everything hurt. I was becoming desperate, desperate for relief, for release, but I had no recourse, nowhere to go. I was trapped inside my body. I can't do this anymore, I finally thought. I can't do this anymore, God. Martha had still not returned. Mary was gone. And Jesus, yes, Jesus, he never came. I clutched the sides of my mat as if it was my last bridge to the world of the senses. Just then, a final spasm of pain shot through my whole body, seizing me with inhuman force and causing such agony that I let out a gasp. Through a veil of tears, I kept my eyes transfixed on the sliver of light coming from the hallway outside my door. Suddenly, a gust of air came through the window, causing the door to sway, to creak, to close, and finally to latch. Everything went black. I went to inhale, but my lungs did not comply. Terror overcame me, the way it does when one chokes on food. My eyes darted for a moment, only to roll back into my cranium as I fell out of being and into oblivion. I share with you my experience, knowing that people meet death in different ways. Some, thanks to what you call near-death experiences, obtain reassuring glimpses of what dreams may come, as one of your great English poets says. But my death was horrific. Standard fare for a world without medicine or morphine, hospitals or hygiene. As for what happened thereafter, I recall nothing. Not even lingering as a soul by my grave for 3 days, as the rabbis taught, hoping to be reunited with my body, only to depart at the first sign of decomposition. No. The fact that I was deceased for 4 days meant that I was really and truly dead. And the only way I can describe it to you is to compare it to a kind of dreamless sleep, where the polarity between self and world totally collapses and all becomes nothing. In short, the darkness I saw is the darkness I became. I merged with it. I ceased to be. No time, no duration, no consciousness, no dreams, just pure pitch black. And then, a twitch, a feeling, my first sensation in the big toe of my right foot, awakening, and then a bolt, the unlatching of a door. Where am I? Is this my room? I see peripherally a sliver of light. Is it the door to the hallway again? No, it's not a door. It's a stone. Someone is rolling a stone. The light from outside, it splashes into my room. No, this is not my room. It's a tomb. I raise my hands wrapped in strips of cloth to shield my wincing eyes. And I hear my name, Lazarus. My heart beats wildly. Lazarus, the voice says again, Lazarus, come out. It's Rabbi. It's Jesus. I stand. I take my first step, an awkward one. My feet and my face are bound with linens. Slowly, I emerge from my cave of stench and death. The crowd gasps. Unbind him, Jesus says, and let him go. I stand before Jesus, my brother. Lazarus, he says, putting his hands on my shoulders, you were not meant for this. You were not meant for death. I look down at my hands. The yellow knuckles are gone. Air now fills my lungs. May God be glorified, I hear a woman say. I look sideways. It's Mary. She and Martha embrace me, tears of joy streaming down their cheeks. I look again at Jesus, who weeps likewise. Why does he weep, I wonder, still bewildered, as my sisters step back and let me go? Did he regret letting me die? Perhaps as he watched the grief it caused my family? Is that why my resuscitation was his last, the seventh and final sign? Did he realize upon seeing my death that death itself must be defeated, not just for me, but for others as well? Several weeks later, I found myself asking the same questions as I stood. You won't believe this. As I stood at the foot of his cross. Next to me was his mother. In agony, she wept for her son. And as she did, Jesus from the cross pointed to me. Woman, he said, here is your son. And then, with the eyes of love and deep compassion, he pointed to her. Here is your mother, he said to me. You see, I, Lazarus, I am the beloved disciple. I am the one, you recall, whom Jesus loved. I was by his side at the Last Supper, and I was the first, after Mary, to discover his empty tomb. The church credited my account to John in the second century when it added titles to the four Gospels. But nowhere in this Gospel is John identified as the one Jesus loved. I, on the other hand, am. Of course, the identity of the beloved disciple doesn't ultimately matter, whether you think it was me, John, or as one apparently controversial author of your time has suggested, Mary Magdalene. What matters is how Jesus speaks to you in my story. Think about it. Jesus didn't come just to save me. He came to save each of you. He came to call you out of your tombs. He came to unbind you and set you free. He came, as he himself says in John, or should I say Lazarus 10:10, that you may have life and have it abundantly. In what ways do you feel bound and entombed? Imagine that the stone of your tomb is being rolled away and that Jesus is calling you to new life, that Jesus is calling to you, come out. You were not meant for death, he says. You, like me, were meant for life. So rise up by the grace of God and be unbound so that together we can leave our tombs, whatever they are, and move into the light of freedom and a new day. This is my gospel, the gospel of Jesus Christ, according to Lazarus. Amen.